Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Miranda. In 2019, Miranda was diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, just 5 years after being treated for a primary diagnosis. We'll be speaking about how diagnosis affects her, particularly with regards to her identity as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. Miranda, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
So Miranda, could you please begin by just telling us a little background about yourself? So what's been your history of breast cancer and how has it and how does it continue to affect you?
So first of all, it does run in my family. Both my mum's older sister and younger sister have had breast cancer in Ghana because that's where my parentage is from. So my mum and I have always been vigilant, obviously, but my mum never expected that I would get breast cancer. She always thought because it was her two sisters, she was like in line to get it. And I was always vigilant because I was like, oh, well, it runs in the family. Let me just check. And so what happened was bit of a like a EastEnders storyline. So in February 2014, my dad died.
Oh, bless, I'm sorry.
So it was just like, it was just really weird. And funerals in Ghana generally don't take, they're not short. Like over here, it's. I always find it weird that it's like, oh, such and such died on Tuesday and then we're burying him like next week. So my dad was buried in June 2014. Oh, wow. Came back and then was just lying down because there was like a heat wave in London, massive heat wave. So I was just lying in my room because it was like really cool. And then I found a lump and I was like, oh, that's not usual. So let's look at the other side. And the other side, there wasn't a lump. And I was like, okay, let's see if this lump goes tomorrow. So it didn't go. So went to the GP. GP didn't have a chaperone at the time because I had a male GP. And he was like, look, because I don't have a, there's not a female chaperone available, because you've told me your family history, I'm just going to straight refer you to the hospital. So I had to wait like 2 weeks for a referral. Went to the hospital. The doctor was like, oh, that doesn't look good, too good. Let me just do a quick ultrasound. Didn't like that. So he said, right, let's give you like a mammogram. Didn't like that. So he said, right, okay, let's give you a biopsy and see what's going on. And then I got a phone call too, like 3 days later, and they were like, oh, we've had like a cancellation. Can you come down? And I was thinking, oh, that's not a good sign. And I was trying to keep it a secret, but then they left a message on my answer phone and my mum heard it.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
So she was like, what's this going on? And I was just like, well, found a lump, blah, blah, blah. So my mum came along with me to my consultation. And then saw the oncologist at my local hospital and she was like, yeah, unfortunately, it is cancer. We'll try and get things done as quickly as possible. Remember, it was the day before my brother's birthday, so couldn't, like, tell him the day after. So I waited a couple of days and then rang a few people and let them know. At the time, I was in training to do the Great North Run. So... So I did that on the Sunday. On the Tuesday, talked about my fertility issues because I was only 32 when I was diagnosed. And then went to see the oncologist at the Royal Marsden and they said, you pretty much need to start chemo yesterday, because when I had my fertility consultation, they found out that I also had polycystic ovary syndrome. It was just like, oh, right, so what else is going to go wrong? And then obviously you've got to have loads of tests. And then on the Thursday, I started chemotherapy, and then I just put on my Facebook. I was like, by the way, it's a half marathon and just going to start chemo today. And everyone was like, what?
Whoa. Yeah. Goodness. Right.
So then I had 8 rounds of chemotherapy. I had a lumpectomy. And then through all the tests as well, they found out I was HER2 positive, which is like a protein that makes cancer cells grow even like faster. Then I was classed as being in remission, and I was fine. I was in remission. Thought, right, let's, you know, this is a second chance of life. Let's just go out. Let's go to gigs. I went to New Zealand on my own.
Wow, yeah.
So then that all happened, and I was like keeping up with my fitness. And then it was coming up to 2018, and I just had this cough, and I just thought, oh, it's just a seasonal thing. It's just like a cold, because I had like a runny nose and stuff like that.
Mm.
But then everything went apart from this cough. The GP was like, oh, it sounds like he got a bit of a chest infection. And I was like, oh, just call 111. So I told 111 about the symptoms and blah, blah, blah. So they were like, right, okay, so take some aspirin and we'll get an ambulance to you. I had to go into A&E. A&E took me to have an x-ray. They were like, yeah, there's like loads of fluid around your heart and around your lungs.
Mm.
They drained all the fluid. And they said, oh, like, because of your history, you're going to have to test it. The doctor was doing his rounds at the time, and obviously they're like, he pulled the curtains, but they're not soundproof. So like, he was like, oh yeah, we found cancer. And then he was like, have you got any questions? And I was like, no. And he was like, all right, see you then. And then like, I burst into tears.
Hmm.
The next day they were like, yeah, it's spread to here, there, everywhere. And then also you've got heart failure, which was a surprise, because it was just like the nurses came and they were like, hi, we're your heart failure team. And I was like, you're my what now? Nobody told me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what a way to find that out.
I was just like, oh, my goodness. Dealing with all that, and that was on my dad's like fifth death anniversary as well. So like, emotionally, I just wasn't in a good place.
Yeah.
But then I think after like just under 2 weeks, they released me, and then they said, oh, come back in about 4 days so we can see how your lungs are doing. Went to the lung department, and they were like, yeah, you need to be readmitted back to hospital. And I was just like, oh, for God's sake.
Oh, no.
In 2019, I was hospitalized 5 times. So the last time I had pneumonia. And then obviously 2020 was when COVID hit. So
yeah.
And that's pretty much it, really.
Oh my God. Yeah, the amount of times that you were sort of, you know, one thing happened and then another thing, and then it just seems sort of like dominoes, that you'd sort of get one thing sorted, but it would have, you know, then the next thing's already fallen over. That must have been so difficult to deal with. Thank you for going through all of that.
It wasn't too bad. I think because I was in the right place and I was taking the medication I needed to take, and that was a big relief, especially to my family, because it was just like, it was just so unexpected, especially because I could lift weights and everything and I was running.
Yeah. So, and especially when you said, you know, that you had heart failure and only just before, you know, a few months before, you'd been training and doing all this fitness stuff. So that's quite the experience you had there, with so many different complications and things. We hear that quite a lot. There's sort of like a strong sense of community amongst people who have had breast cancer, or just sort of cancer in general. Did you find that with your diagnoses both times? Did you kind of have that support of people around you?
Definitely. Sometimes it makes me feel a bit sad, because I'm part of like a breast cancer support group. Mm. And a lot of them say like their friends have disappeared, or like they've got no one to talk to. And I've been really lucky in that regard, where I do have the support group, but I've also got my friends as well.
Mm.
So even though like we call them like cancer muggles, because they don't always like to go through cancer, sometimes you don't want to talk about cancer all the time.
Yeah.
So you just talk about odds and ends, like, oh, what did you watch last night? Or you've been to the cinema, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just normal everyday life.
And
I mean, likewise, we mentioned in the introduction that you're part of the LGBTQ community. And we know that that kind of tends to have quite a defined community as well. And have you noticed at all if there's any like overlap between LGBTQ and cancer communities? Are there sort of, you know, that middle bit of the Venn diagram where that crosses over and people kind of reach out to help one another in that? Or is it more sort of diverse within the cancer community?
It's weird because you can't really separate one from the other. If you've got cancer and you've got and you're LGBT, you know, QI plus, you can't take one from away from the other. It's all kind of melded into one. So you might need more support from one community or from the other community, but you can't really separate anything, you know. Like, I can't separate being a woman or identifying as a woman, as being black, as, you know, being bisexual. It's all the same.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be the person I am without it all being one.
Yeah.
As it were.
Oh, I absolutely hear what you're saying. Yeah. And that's a really great point. But do you feel at all sometimes where there might be certain things that you know, if we pick up on any parts of those identity aspects, are there some things that maybe only another black person with cancer could understand, or another bi person with cancer could understand? Or do you feel that those kinds of things aren't as important? Or, you know, sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't?
I would say so, especially being black as well. I have like difficult with my veins. So because I had lymph nodes taken out when I had primary breast cancer, only use my right arm, and it's getting more and more difficult as the years go by. So the nurses are just like, oh, have you thought about getting a PICC line or a port line? And it's just like, well, for me, they don't really realize the impact of scarring on black skin. What a scar here, but when I was probably about 8, 9, I had septic arthritis, and like, I've still got this scar like over 30 years on, and I don't really realize how, like, how we scar easily, how we keloid easily. And I have to sort of, every time I go in, explain, like, this is the reason why I don't want this. Like, PICC lines, you can't get them wet. You have to get them changed every week, and ports, you know, because I've got heart problems, the port has to go near the heart. And then it's just kind of like, oh, I didn't know that. And it's like, well, why didn't you know that? Why isn't it taught in the first place?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so sometimes when you have those, it's not even a niche community, but when you have a certain community that might have different considerations to another, you're absolutely right. Like, we should make all those needs known, even if the person administering the treatment to you might not belong to that community.
I mean, if you don't know, you don't know, but it's kind of like, well, why don't you know? And why aren't you sort of, why is it an issue? It shouldn't really be an issue. Sometimes it is difficult, especially like also being part of the LGBTQI community. Some people feel comfortable saying it. Some people don't feel comfortable when they're dealing with, you know, issues with their sexuality. They don't feel comfortable in themselves. They've not come out themselves. So it's always helpful if you know that the nurse is on your side, even like wearing those rainbow lanyards or badges. At least you know that, okay,
yeah,
they kind of, and if I need to speak to someone about stuff, especially with the trans community as well. Recently, the deputy speaker of the House of Lords, his brother died through cervical cancer. And it's kind of like, well, why aren't these things sort of picked up? The same like with the breast cancer community. I mean, it's not so bad in the sense that, you know, we're always telling people to sort of check their chest, check their collarbones, that sort of thing, which is good. But if you don't feel that you can put yourself in that place to sort of say things, then what are you going to do? And also, like, systems, computer systems, the NHS needs updating as well. Because he got missed because he's trans. And it's just like, well, diabolical, really.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And, yeah, I'm glad that you touched on the fact that it's not just about, you know, making people aware of what might affect them. Because, you know, sometimes if we say that only women are at risk of cervical cancer, then that, you know, excludes people who have transitioned and who aren't women. but you know, if the NHS has got them down as male and then doesn't still invite them for a cervical smear, then yeah, they absolutely might be missed. But you also touched on, like, you need to make sure that those people still feel comfortable to talk to the people that are meant to be looking after them, that are supposed to be providing care. And I suppose even if you are being treated for breast cancer, for anything else, if you know you've got a nurse there that you could talk to about, because I know sometimes people might ask a very innocuous question and sort of assume you have a boyfriend or something, and that might not be, you know, you might not be someone who's attracted to men. But even being able to being comfortable to say, like, oh, actually, I've got a girlfriend, or actually, I don't date men, you know, that kind of thing. Just having rapport, I think, makes whatever treatment you're undergoing that much, you feel a bit safer, you feel a bit more comfortable. And I mean, as well, while we've touched on transgender people's risk of different types of cancer, and I know this comes up sometimes, that transgender men who have had top surgery, sort of very similar to a mastectomy, don't realize that they can get breast cancer still. And transgender women who have later taken hormones and then developed breasts might not realize that they're at risk. They're at much lower risk than the cis women, I think, cisgender women. But there's still a risk there. And that's, like, it's so important that we talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, that it's not a LGBT storyline. But at the moment, we've got Faith Dingle in Emmerdale, who she previously had a double mastectomy. Her cancer's now come back, and she's been told she's got months rather than years. And obviously she didn't think it would come back. And I remember having to explain to my mum, she was like, oh, well, I don't understand, like, it's come back. And I'm like, yeah, you can sort of try and reduce the chances, but if it's going to come back, it's going to come back.
Yeah,
you can eat all the goji berries in the world, if it's going to come back, it's going to come back.
You're unfortunately right there, and also unfortunately right in that a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, this is quite a big question to ask, but do you think that it's important to medical organizations, or even, you know, charities, other organizations involved with those who are experiencing breast cancer, to kind of specifically consider the needs of LGBTQ people in their service offerings?
Definitely. Because it's becoming more and more prevalent in the news, especially with trans people and non-binary people just don't realize it's kind of like a given, and then you have to kind of like think about it and like, oh yeah, okay. And it's hard at the moment, but it's getting easier. I mean, 10 years ago probably wouldn't be discussing this in the podcast, or if it was, it'd be very, very, very niche and low, you know, listenership. But you know, while we're not there yet, we're getting there. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah. Sorry, when you say you know, it's just a given, do you think that people who are not LGBTQ plus themselves might just assume that, you know, oh, everyone's needs are sort of met equally?
Yeah, definitely.
Right, yeah.
I was watching the Paralympian Ellie Simmons talk about a cure for dwarfism. And then she off the cuff mentioned about, you know, I had to get tampons and tampads. And it was like something just clicked in my mind. I was just like, I didn't even think like people with disabilities would be such a massive issue. I was like, why am I thinking like that? You know, it's not right, really, to be honest, but at least we're now sort of talking about things a bit more and thinking about people more, not just, you know, people who are, you know, neurotypical. The communities, like Black communities, Asian communities, LGBTQI plus communities. And we are, I know it's a slow progress and it is frustrating, but like I said, we are getting there. Everyone will be able to live comfortably.
Yeah, yeah. And at the very least, sort of access the treatment that they might need that's most specialist to them.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully, yeah, it wouldn't even be seen as sort of having to seek out that specialist treatment. It should just be known. But if we sort of consider more broadly, during your treatment, has there been any services that you would have liked to see that help you specifically as someone who's living with secondary breast cancer? Because I know a lot of things might lean towards primary sometimes, but especially on the podcast when we've spoken to people, I think there tends to be a dearth of secondary services.
Looking at the Breast Cancer Now Facebook postings, a lot of people kind of not bury their head in the sand, but just obviously having primary is a worry, but then having, you know, the possibility of it developing into secondary, they just kind of don't want to know. But for me, it's kind of like, you know your enemy. And I think there needs to be sort of more of a focus. Not that there isn't a focus on primary, because that's fantastic, because you're trying to reduce the risk, but the risk is there and you need to prepare yourself if that happens, what you need to look out for, what you need to do, get in touch with your GP if that's possible. And as well as that, there's the sort of postcode lottery as well, because while some drugs are available in England, they're not available in Scotland or Northern Ireland or Wales, and that's a worry as well. But some people literally have to like move in order to be able to access certain drugs with secondary. Like your charity has, you know, done a lot with Trovalive?
Trodelvy, yeah. Hard to say, isn't it? I get it wrong half the time.
And it's like, oh, it's welcoming, you know, one bit, and it's not welcoming another bit of the four nations. And again, that's frustrating. And then it's also, if you're in, like, say, England, I'll get better treatment down south than I would be up north. And it's like, well, why is that? As well as, you know, being able to talk to someone who is, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, that sort of thing, or feeling comfortable to be able to give out your worries or be able to talk to someone about it in relation to cancer.
Yeah, that's such a fantastic point. And we're saying how you know, we should be considerate of other things, even if that might not be our personal experience. But even I had not thought, and like speaking as a queer person myself, I hadn't even thought, oh, what if I needed to access medical treatment, but I live somewhere that wasn't, you know, I didn't feel safe to talk about certain parts of my identity. So yeah, that's such a fantastic point. And how certain areas maybe people are not accessing as high a quality care as they need, because there may be other issues facing them because of other intersectional parts of their identity, of their race or their sexuality or their gender. And it goes right back to what you were saying at the beginning. You can't actually separate those things. You know, you're a person who experiences breast cancer, but you're also all these other identities at the same time. And it's so important that all of those parts of you are catered to when you actually go and seek medical care.
Exactly.
I mean, this has been a really informative talk, actually. I think just for me personally, and I hope for people listening, it's been really great to hear your thoughts on this. Was there anything that you think you'd like to add on the subject at all?
I know that there's a few charities that are involved with both cancer and the LGBTQI plus community, which would be helpful not only for Breast Cancer Now, but just in general, so people know if they don't feel comfortable, they can speak to other organisations. One is called Living Through This.
Is it Live Through This? I think I might have.
That's it.
Yeah, Live Through This, yeah.
And I don't know if they're still around, but there was Cancer is a Drag, which I think drag queens trying to sort of raise money for various organisations. So.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Oh, I hope they are still around. We'll have to investigate.
They need to sort of work in conjunction with other sort of, like yourselves at Breast Cancer Now, other charities, because, you know, the louder the voice is, the more you get heard and the more will get done.
Absolutely. And hopefully, are you sharing your voice on this podcast? That's just that's a part of that, you know? But it is definitely a case of more people need to join in and sort of lend their voices to these things.
People need to feel that they can as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We need to know that, you know, I mean, it's okay to be scared, but, you know, we're not scary.
that's some excellent points that you've made here. Is there anything that you wanted to, do you have a social media account that you'd like to shout out to or anything, you know, is there any way you share your story that people can follow along to?
I'm sharing it all the time because I'm always saying our representation matters.
Yeah.
On Instagram, I'm Mizzilla, so MIZZILLA. And on Twitter, I'm just Mizzy Asherty. So Mizzy is MIZZIE, and then Asherty is ASHITEY.
We'll make sure to link those in our show notes. And genuinely, thank you so much. This has been a great discussion, and thank you for your time as well.
No, you're very much welcome.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.